Hello, and welcome back to the Date Night Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Russell, and with me is my co-host, Ashley Russell.
Hey, everyone.
It's been a little while, hasn't it?
It's been so long. It's great to be back.
Yeah, and you know, the reason for the lack of episodes is pretty simple. It's just been, there's been a lack of movies. Or I guess I should say...
lots of good movies.
Yeah, movies worth talking about, really, to be honest. And the calendar just kind of, it's kind of dried up around like late summer, early fall. And box office is at the lowest point that it's been in decades. So it's really been slim pickings there.
There's been, you know, maybe one or two good movies this year, in my opinion.
Well, we saw Top Gun. It's the highest grossing movie of the year so far. And pretty much everyone who's seen that seems to enjoy it, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know too many people who are like, oh, that movie sucks. It did so well because of the word of mouth.
Yeah.
So that was a real crowd pleaser. That's been a highlight. But aside from that, it's been rough.
It's been
as far as big movies, yeah, and even little movies, it's been rough. It's been rough here.
I will say, we saw The Menu a couple of weeks ago that I actually enjoyed, even though it was a little gruesome.
Sure.
But it was interesting. It was unique.
Something original.
Original.
Yeah. Not bad. Not a bad movie.
Not a sequel.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, aimed at adults. Yeah. Just something a little different. That movie's been doing okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think for the time being, you know, new episodes, they'll be put out with less frequency than we're used to.
Yeah.
But we're still watching movies. And on this episode, we've got a big one to talk about. It's Avatar: The Way of Water. This is, of course, the long-awaited follow-up to James Cameron's record-breaking smash hit Avatar, which came out in 2009. And as of this recording, it remains the highest-grossing movie worldwide.
Yes.
And a fun fact for our listeners, Avatar was one of the first movies that you and I saw together when we started dating.
That's true. What, 13 years ago?
That's right. Yeah, it was one of our first date movies.
It's like, wow.
And yeah, I mean, we met in September 2009, and we were doing the long-distance dating thing for a while. And I can actually list the first handful of movies that we saw together during that period. Are you ready?
I'm ready. 2012.
That was the first. We remember that one. Not a great movie.
Yeah, not a great movie.
But after that, we got The Blind Side.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And then The Princess and the Frog.
That was okay.
And then, yeah, after that was Avatar, which we saw in California. You were visiting me.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of Avatar when you saw it?
I was. The first movie? Yeah, absolutely. It was fresh. It was unique. It was kind of like the first kind of motion cap movie that was out there that they put.
Well, the first one done on that scale.
Yeah.
Right? Because we've done motion capture with like Gollum before. I mean, the Polar Express, that was mocap, you know, with Tom Hanks on the train. But to the extent that James Cameron wanted to utilize it, it had never been done on that scale.
No, yeah.
Combined with like photoreal virtual environments, a real breakthrough.
He created this world of Pandora.
It feels like fully realized.
Well, it's the fully world. Realized, but it's kind of like on the same wavelength as, you know, Harry Potter's and the
Star Wars
and like all of these things where they're creating this brand new environment with languages, with different species. Like, it's just really cool. Customs. Like, so you have to go, and when you're thinking about a movie like this and you're writing the script, you have to like,
you have
I mean,
to think of everything.
Holy smokes.
Every detail. Yeah, it's a big undertaking. But, you know, we mentioned Harry Potter, you know, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. Avatar hasn't quite, I mean, despite being the highest grossing movie ever, it hasn't quite had, like, the cultural impact of those other franchises, would you say?
I agree. I think there's more cultism on those other franchises than there is Avatar. But then again,
I think that has to do with the characters.
It does.
Avatar is kind of lacking in memorable characters.
Yeah.
The characters are kind of stock. I think most people, if pressed, they couldn't even recall who the main character is of Avatar.
Yeah.
It's Jake Sully.
They would probably say the handicapped kid. the handicapped army vet.
The Australian dude. Sam Worthington.
Sidney Weaver. Like... Sigourney Weaver.
Dr. Grace Jones.
Yeah.
Unforgettable characters, right? If there's any shortcoming to the movie, it would be that the characters are maybe a little thin.
Yeah. I would say the characters, probably the Na'vi characters, are a little bit more in depth. I would say the human characters are not so much. Human characters are more or less like the villains.
The villains are pretty stock, like cut yeah. out, very obvious. And like Stephen Lang as like Colonel Quaritch, who I love, he's a lot of fun, but he's playing it real broad. He's playing it like an anime villain.
Yeah. like
it's very cartoonish yeah. the way he kind of, but it still holds together. The experience still holds together.
Like I can't imagine somebody like that just having absolutely no heart, no like compassion.
He's not really given much depth. I mean, and we'll get into it. Even in the sequel, he's not really rounded out that much.
Because spoiler alert, he's the villain in the sequel too.
13 years and they couldn't think of a new villain.
Oh my God.
But no, just going back to the original, I would give the theatrical experience of watching Avatar an A. I would give the home video viewing experience like a B.
Yeah.
It really is a movie that diminishes on a smaller screen.
It does. I rewatched the first Avatar not too long ago. And it didn't have the same impact as it does when you're in a huge theater.
You have to see it in theaters. The movie's strengths are really like visual and just the immersion into the world. And that, of course, I mean, that's amplified on a big screen. It's diminished on the small screen. But honestly, when Avatar was in theaters, I went back multiple times because I love the spectacle. I love the eye candy. And, you know, in general, I'm a pretty big James Cameron fan. I'd probably put his two Terminator movies as my favorite. But you got Aliens, The Abyss, True Lies, Titanic. These are all bangers. And Avatar is worthy of being in that company, I think. Yeah, I view all these as like very entertaining, significant creative achievements. Do you have a favorite James Cameron film?
I mean, duh, it's Titanic. I mean, Titanic is in my opinion, is one of James Cameron's best like character-driven dramas, right? There was drama, there was intrigue, there was romance, there was action.
I think it's the only historical drama he's done. Most of his movies are like science fiction spectacles. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Titanic was a departure for him.
And then just the set of, you know, you see the back behind the scenes on how Titanic was made. I mean, it's a pretty realistic ship. I mean, in a huge pool. Like, yes, there's CGI in it, but I think a lot of it was real live action. And it was done with a lot of stunt work.
It was another huge undertaking. All these movies.
Two really good actors that everybody knows. I mean, Leo and Kate Winslet. I mean, there were lines in there that people still to this day can say. And like they say over and over and over again. Like, and you know exactly.
I'm the king of the world.
Yeah.
James Cameron said it himself when he won his Oscars.
I'll never let go. She let go. But, you know.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of movies that resonate with me. You know, Terminator was great. I mean, you got Hasta La Vista, baby, and you've got something.
I'll be back. Well, the first two, he did the first two and then he stopped. And those first two are classic. They are just awesome sci-fi action classics. Both one and two are equally awesome in my book. So yeah, your favorite is Titanic. And yeah, that... It's a great movie. And
it was long too, but you know, it's a
3-hour movie that it still flows.
It flows very fast. You don't think that it's 3 hours.
Well, because you kind of like you become part of the people on the ship.
Yeah,
you're experiencing it on the ship.
Yes,
and just the way he kind of uses time there to make you immersed on that ship. So he very skilled director. I mean, one of the top. And so, yeah, you know, back to Avatar, you know, when it came out, that was when 3D was being reintroduced as a novelty. And I mean, 3D was around in the 50s. It died off. It came back in the 80s. Then it died off. And then thanks to movies like Avatar, it became popular again in the late aughts. And that's how you and I saw it originally in IMAX 3D. But since then, the appeal of 3D has really worn off. And I personally have really soured on the format. And my opinion is that 3D is a scam. Especially if you're being charged extra for it. And listeners can check out our episode on Alita, Battle Angel, to hear me rant more about 3D. But in short, I don't fuck with the glasses.
Well, it gives me a headache. A big headache. And it's just, it's not really, it doesn't add anything for me.
Not for me. Some people claim that yeah. they're getting something out of it. I never have. And, you know,
one of the things that you and I actually agree on.
Well, I knew that there would be another 3D push with the release of this film because it's James Cameron and Avatar.
Well, he made it. I mean, the way that he made it too was specific to 3D. Like, it wasn't just one frame or one scene that's 3D and then changes, because that's how it was before. Like, they only did a couple of scenes that were 3D. He really did shot it in 3D. I think he created the camera.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
It was like a new stereoscopic rig. Absolutely. And yeah, to his credit, like, he doesn't use 3D to just like throw shit in your face.
No.
He uses it to give, I guess, like
immersion.
The sense of immersion and just depth in the image. But, you know, again, it diminishes the image for me. It doesn't really work for me. And so, yeah, I knew they were going to push it again with this movie. And I knew that you and I, we were going to have to go out of our way to avoid watching it in the format. Because, again, I don't mess with the glasses. I don't mess with them.
But we do like watching it in Dolby.
Well, we like big screens.
Yeah.
I'm all for a giant screen, great surround sound. Give it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really nice in Dolby. So
we did. Yeah. We saw this in Dolby 2D without the glasses. But James Cameron, he throws a new wrinkle into the mix with this movie with the high frame rate. And that was something I wasn't expecting for this presentation. I knew that like IMAX 3D showings had it. Our showing wasn't marked with that.
Yeah.
So it was a real surprise, you know, when those opening logos kind of started and it was clear like
it was, said that it was different.
Something was off. And I think you and I kind of looked at each other like, what? Like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, in short, what high frame rate is, it's a projected frame rate that's higher than the standard 24. So it's usually like 48 or 60 frames per second. 10 years ago, Peter Jackson experimented with this with the Hobbit movies, and the feedback was not positive. And so those, you know, HFR screenings, they were very limited. And Ang Lee, he's also experimented with this in movies like Gemini Man, which we've discussed on this show. And the purpose of doing this, according to the filmmakers, is that the image is crystal clear with more immediacy and less motion blur, because 24 frames, it gives on-screen action a kind of attractive, dreamlike motion blur that we register subconsciously. And HFR eliminates that, and it gives the appearance of ultra-sharp video. The effect is kind of like a TV display at Best Buy that has like motion smoothing cranked all the way up. You know what I'm talking about.
I do, yeah.
That's kind of how it looked, right? Yeah. So it's a fine look for live sports and video games. It's a straight up dreadful look for feature length motion pictures.
Well, yeah, I mean, it.
But we already proved this with the Hobbit movies.
We did. And, you know, I'll be honest, like when it wasn't throughout the whole film, it was, they pick and choose which scenes to do. So, like,
that's the new little kink. Your eyes can't settle into it.
And so I kept having to look away from the screen so I wouldn't get like motion sickness or like dizziness. Like, that's why I don't like handheld, is because I get dizzy, I get motion sickness.
There's a lot of
handheld
high frame rate footage in this, right?
Yeah.
And it's disorienting because it feels like things are moving too quickly, especially when there's a lot of movement on screen. There's too much for your eye to like register. I mean, the high frame rate, I think, worked a little better with the underwater stuff because things don't move as quickly underwater.
Yeah.
That's where it felt like a little slowed down. But above water, it was dreadful and disorienting, like you said. And yeah, like, you know, with the Hobbit movies and Gemini Man, at least it was a set frame rate. If you're going to see it in that high frame rate, it's going to stay at that frame rate. But here, it's literally like a wide shot is 60 frames. We'll punch in for a close up and it's at 24. And then we'll punch back out to a high frame rate. And it's like that for three flipping hours.
3 hours.
And so your eyes.
No, 3.5.
Your eyes never adjust. Yeah, 3 hours plus. I mean, throwing previews.
3.5 hours long.
It's half your day. It's a very puzzling way to present a movie. I know James Cameron's a master, but what the hell is this?
Back when the first Avatar came out, even Titanic and all of that, we didn't have social media really at our fingertips. We didn't really have instant gratification. People could sit in the theater and be entertained. now, I think with social media, with our phones and with everything at our fingertips right now, 3.5 hours is it's too long. You know, I just I can't concentrate for 3.5 hours on a movie that is making me nauseous.
So, yeah, this the running time really feels
long,
ultra indulgent. Like the man doesn't make short. I guess that's why maybe his first Terminator is my favorite, because it's well under 2 hours. He didn't have a huge ass budget. He had to really keep it tight and economical. And to me, like, it's his tightest, leanest film.
Yeah.
Because he really just gets carried away with himself, this guy. But I guess, you know, let's kind of get into the plot.
Let's do it.
So this movie, it picks up over a decade after the first film. Jake Sully, he's living in Pandora, and he's got what seems like half a dozen kids.
He's got 4 kids. I mean,
well, I think they have 3 of their own and then 2 adopted, I think is the deal.
Spider is not adopted. Well, is he adopted?
He's one of the adopted kids.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, the kids are...
So it'd be 5.
5 kids, yeah. Natium, Loak.
Yeah.
Took.
Yeah.
Kiri.
Yeah.
And Spider.
And Spider.
And we're introduced to all these kids in the span of like 1.5 minutes. And like some of their backstories don't even make any sense. Like Kiri, she's the spawn of Sigourney Weaver's avatar?
Yeah, they don't really go into that.
Is this like a Jesus baby? Like, what is this?
Well, she doesn't know who her dad is. I mean, that's kind of like she has no idea.
How do avatars give birth?
But it could be because now Sigourney Weaver is now part of
the home tree.
Ancestors in the home tree.
I think she got plugged into the home tree in the first one.
And maybe there was something that transferred when they tried to save her and put her in her avatar.
Well, we got 3
but
more.
But we don't know.
We have 3 more movies to unpack that.
Yeah. So, either that or Sigourney Weaver had a crush on or had an affair with somebody. Could have been like taking advantage of somebody. Like, well, we don't know.
I guess that's what I'm confused by. Like, is it like her avatar that's getting busy with someone?
Yeah, it was her avatar in the cryo.
But
And some of the kids were full Na'vi, and then some of them had there were half and half. So I think the oldest son was full Na'vi, and then all the rest were half and half. I think
you're right, and yeah. I don't know if I fully understand that. Again, the movie just spins through this part really fast.
And the only way that they knew that they were half and half was because the Na'vi have 4 fingers and the mixed was 5.
I guess that plays into the plot later on.
Later on,
a little bit. And so we should mention Spider. Mild spoiler, he is the son of Colonel Quaritch.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that ends up being like a major...
Didn't even know that Colonel Quaritch had...
Yeah, this is another, like, I don't fully understand this.
Relationship, apparently, in Pandora.
Right.
I mean...
I you just got to go with it. Again, we're given 90 seconds to kind of, like, process all these kids' backstories. And, yeah, speaking of Quaritch, he's back in avatar form. His character's consciousness has been uploaded into an avatar body. And really, the whole thrust of the film is Quaritch seeking revenge against Jake. And that's kind of the whole plot.
Well, yeah, and I think he gets brought back by, I'm not going to say U.S. military, I'm going to say the world military, because I think it's, because the Earth is dying. And so we're trying to figure out
where else
to go.
Humans want to inhabit Pandora to make it their Earth too.
Yeah, and so 2 birds, 1 stone, they want to knock out the ringleader, which is Jake Sully.
This is kind of set up with like Edie Falco's character. She's the one like kind of giving him the orders. There's a scene where she's in like this weird mech suit and she's drinking coffee.
Yeah.
She's got like real coffee in one hand and then like a fake coffee in her robot hand or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, where are her hands going? and her robot is like kickboxing. I think at one point.
Well, that's how you get introduced to her.
Yeah. So she's
doing her martial arts and, you know.
It's a weird kind of like skeleton robot that she's walking around like on stilts. But so, yeah, she gives him the orders to kind of draw Jake out.
Then it's then it pushes out to like once they land and they burn a lot of the forest.
It drives them out of the Pandora Forest.
It drives them out of the Pandora Forest, but it's like a year later, and then Earth is settled and creating their own little like area.
Do we flash forward a year?
Yes.
Okay. And yeah, so like Quaritch and his team of like recombinant Marines, they chase Sully and his family out. I mean, I there's a number of times where like they kidnap the kids.
Number of times, like who does that?
Like over and over. I'm like, are they like holding guns at like kids' heads in this movie?
Yeah.
Didn't like that.
Yeah. Guns. They put knives to their throats. Like
yeah, like yeah.
Kids.
Like, too much like kids in Mortal Jeopardy in this movie for my taste.
And then they had they actually caught one and put him through torture.
His own kid, yeah. Spider is like a weird like psychological torture thing. Kind of funny.
But like
it's weird.
So weird. Like it's like no rules. Like no holds bar. Like they don't care about.
Yeah. And the kids are really the main characters in this movie. I feel like that's never the direction I want like a badass sci-fi action franchise to take is like, what are the kids up to?
Yeah.
But they really are like the main characters here.
I think that they changed Jake Sully's personality. And what I mean by that is like he's now afraid. And I mean, I get it, kids, but like he's afraid for the kids. He just, he thinks that running away.
He's all about protecting his family at all costs.
And protecting his people. And he thinks that protecting his people means running away and not fighting back.
I thought that was one of the nice screenplay elements of the first is that Jake's character really does have a full arc in that film. Like his character, along with the audience, goes on a full journey. And it's a subjective journey. Like we have a clear point of view in that film.
Yeah.
And that point of view takes us through the world of Pandora. And Jake has no character arc,
no.
I would say. It's we're back at square one, really.
Well, yeah, because they leave and then they go to a water tribe that is on the other side of Pandora. It's an island that is not even close.
Right. They go to like a reef area where they meet up with the Metcaina clan.
Yeah.
And we got Cliff Curtis and Kate Winslet as like the leaders of the tribe.
I didn't realize that was Kate Winslet.
Yeah. Oh. I'm not sure what she's doing in this movie, to be honest. I thought Cliff Curtis was good.
Yeah, he was good.
He's probably doing the best acting. And I mean, the kids' acting generally kind of sucks. But Sam Worthington was solid, even though he doesn't have a whole lot to do. We didn't even say that Spider is dressed like Tarzan in the entire movie.
Oh, in the entire movie.
He's just wearing a loincloth. Yeah. Like,
he wants to be like the avatars, you know, and it's fine.
In the opening scene, it's whatever. But like by the end of the movie, like he's been with like General Quaritch the whole time. He's still just like wearing a loincloth. It was just...
what he's raised. He's raised with the avatars who dress...
So you were cool with that.
Fine with that. It went with the character. That's how he was raised.
And this guy's got dreadlocks. It looked silly.
Yeah.
That was it. It looked silly.
The dreadlocks did look a little silly. But that's fine.
And also
but
an air mask.
Well, yeah, but
it's
I mean...
a very silly look.
The avatars have dreadlocks. So it's not...
It's goofy.
Yeah. But... what's her face? The
Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana. I didn't.
Very underused.
Was very underutilized. I'm curious as to maybe she was doing Guardians of the Galaxy at the same time and had limited time to really like do this. I'm being serious.
Sure.
Because you don't see her the whole training period of them learning how to train in the water and all of that. You don't really see her character.
It's
all about the kids, and it's all about Sam.
All about the damn kids. Well, and the whale also.
Well, and
whale is a major character. Yeah, it's a shame because Neytiri was one of the stronger characters from the first.
Yeah.
And Zoe Saldana was really great, I thought, in that role. And here she is just way underutilized. Again, I mean, we have to make way for half a dozen kids. And, you know, we got to get their little subplots. How about like two or three kids? We got to have five? that we got to like track?
Their love was so much, Patrick, that they had to procreate. And they don't have birth control like they do here.
Clearly, there's no Na'vi birth control, I guess. But yeah, this is the whole movie. It's essentially a chase film, but it moves really slow. And it takes 3 hours long for this chase to really come to a head. But the structure and the main story beats are kind of identical to the first film. Which Same. Is, I have a beef with sequels that start off by undoing the events of the previous film.
Yeah.
Because we saw Quaritch take multiple arrows to the chest, right?
Yeah.
Dead on screen. Yeah. It was a satisfying death. Let that stand. Let that stand and bring in a new villain.
Like, I would have loved Edie Falco. Movie
undoes it. Absolutely. Edie Falco.
To be the villain. And like maybe have some kind of character arc where they try to make peace at the beginning and then something happens and then all hell breaks loose.
Or hear me out, establish a new threat.
Yeah.
And then like if you're determined to bring back Quaritch, save that for like a third act kind of deal.
Or maybe
or like you're raising the stakes.
Yeah, or maybe like a civil war on Pandora. Like
maybe they're building to that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like something along those lines versus bringing back the same villain.
It seemed incredibly unimaginative to hang the whole movie on the same conflict.
Yeah.
But yeah, but before we go too much further and get into spoilers, what were your overall thoughts of this film? I think I know what you're going to say. Yeah, you're just shaking your head, giving like a Tony Soprano frown.
I mean, I would probably say it was a C-. And it's not the popular opinion right now, because I think a lot of people...
Well, got an A cinema score.
Yeah, I don't know you know, they asked us to review this. I'm like, you don't want me to do that.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Well, it takes 20 minutes to fill those things out. Yeah. So they could help themselves out by like trimming that process like, down.
You
like,
really,
just give us a grade and let that be that.
Yeah, you don't really want me to do that.
It was, but I mean, our experience was really marred by the frame rate bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the frame rate and bringing back an old villain, and that was just...
I feel like if I'm looking beyond the frame rate issue, which really just made the whole thing very unpleasant to sit through for 3 hours... Looking beyond that, trying to be objective, I feel like this is kind of just, it's like an average franchise blockbuster with above average visual effects. Like the effects are great, I think.
Yeah. They're needed.
Hard to tell with that frame rate, but it makes it look like a fucking video game.
I think that it needed to have a little more humor. It was such a serious movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
There was no humor in it. Even in Titanic, there was humor in it. Like
Avatar, there's humor in it. Absolutely.
But there was a lot of bullying because Sully's kids weren't like anybody else. You know, they were different from the, you know, the water tribe. And that's fine. Like, they get over that. It's just so serious.
And anyone who is sensitive to depictions of animal abuse, even though these are cartoons.
Yeah.
Right. If you're sensitive to that, I mean, this movie will probably trigger some.
It triggered something for some me. Feelings.
There are stretches of this movie that are distressing to watch. And because it's James Cameron, it like a 1 minute sequence goes on for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into spoilers for Avatar: The Way of Water.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back, and we're going to get into some spoilers for Avatar: The Way of Water. One of their sons, Loak, befriends a whale, or what's known as a tolkun.
Yep.
And this tolkun is named Payakan.
Yep. Payakan.
And you better believe we're having subtitled conversations with whales in this movie.
here is the thing. So these whales, they are pack animals. Like, they will travel in packs. And this whale was an outcast. He was kicked out of his whale tribe.
Just like Loak.
Just Loak feels like an outcast because right. he doesn't think the same way. And Sully's really hard on him. And so he bonded with this whale.
Payakan.
And Payakan was a known killer. Like, the whales do not kill. Even if they're being attacked, they don't kill. And so Payakan was different in the sense that he's a lot like Lomak, in the sense that he wants to take action. Maybe take action without thinking of the consequences. And they and that that is a lot of connection between the two. And so they've bonded. Now,
this whale stuff takes up maybe 30 to 40 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
It was a lot of whale stuff.
It was interesting because each whale is bonded to an avatar.
I found some of this stuff.
Or the Navi. Or no, not the Navi. What was the...
Metcaina.
Metcaina. So each whale is bonded to a Metcaina.
Right.
Tribe.
This whale stuff, it's a significant portion of the film. I guess for me, like, I find this interesting to a degree. But we kind of, we spend a little too much time on it. And we definitely spend way too much time on the whaling scenes.
Well, yeah. So here is the thing. So in the first movie, it was unobtainium.
They're after that unobtainium.
And they didn't obtain it.
Do they mention that at all in this one?
Yes, they do. They're okay. Like, unobtainium with small potatoes. We're not after that anymore. While they kill the whale with the mom, they kill the mom and the calf, which is traumatic.
This is like a 10-minute sequence of them firing bullets and explosive harpoons at whales.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, like, horrifying.
And you're seeing, like the whale, like, bleeding and crying out. I mean, like, it just goes on and on.
After hearing that these whales have emotions, that they're smart, that they're intelligent beings, and that they have so much more, they can communicate. Like, they are more intelligent than humans, right? And then they're going after a mom and her baby that she waited so long to have.
Which whale did they kill? The mom?
The mom, the big one, the one that was bonded to the chieftain's wife.
Okay.
To Kate Winslet's character.
And it's this horrible scene. And then right after that, we see them, like, graphically drill right up into its brain.
And we find out that this brain juice... It's like a serum that they drill out of.
This is literally a scene in the movie.
Yeah.
They're drilling out whale brain juice.
And this is like an anti-aging thing. So, like, for humans, you take it, you don't age, and you live forever. And so, obviously, you know, people are afraid of dying. Like,
and it's worth, like, $80 million per vial.
Per vial, per whale.
Right.
But it's what's funding everything.
Okay. Like, what? Whatever.
Right? Like,
whatever.
It's so stupid.
I can roll with some of this stuff, and maybe a less self-serious movie.
I find it very disheartening that you have a lot of characters that just have no heart.
It becomes repetitive, especially over 3 hours. Yeah, it becomes repetitive.
Like, they only have one, like, strain of focus. Like,
the bad guys have no redemptive qualities.
No redemptive qualities. And that was the scientist or the hunter of the whales.
I think one of the scientists, I think Jermaine Clement, he kind of seems...
But he goes along with it.
He goes along with it, but he doesn't... We can see he's, like, a little conflicted.
Well, and I think...
That's about the degree of shading we get.
At the end, I think he was happy that the whale took charge.
That's like, one little degree of depth we get with these bad guys. But otherwise, they are pretty stock.
Yeah.
Just stone-cold killers. I find all of that stuff kind of at odds with the movie's environmental themes. Like, it's a heavy environmentalist movie.
Yeah.
That was a big part of the first film, and I'm all for that. And it's heavy,
being one with nature, being one with mother, being one with
Protect the land around you. But James Cameron, I mean, he really kind of fetishizes all of the, like, abuse and carnage, and these guys just going, like, crazy, like, blowing shit up and setting things on fire and abusing animals,
abusing the other tribes, like. colonel went to different tribes and like burnt down their environment, burnt down their houses.
That stuff, it felt better balanced in the first.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff I was just uncomfortable with. And I can handle a violent movie when I feel like violence is warranted. When there's meaning behind it.
Yeah, these guys are like, just stalking whales.
They're just violent for the sake of being violent because they are trying to take over this planet and they're going to do everything they can to make it happen. And that, to me, just is not warranted. You know?
Well, they are the bad guys. So
they are the bad guys.
To the movie's credit, you know, killing this whale, it's depicted as a devastating moment for the Mekaina clan. Yeah. It's kind of... And like in the first film, when they take down the home tree, like that triggers the big battle.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's like a step too far. That's what this whale hunting is. Like it's the home tree.
It's the home tree.
Yeah. It brings Jake out of hiding.
Yeah.
And it sets the stage for the final hour of the film where we get a series of standoffs. And it kind of culminates with Jake and Quaritch with a knife fight, just like the first.
But it's like fight after fight after fight. Like they, you know, Jake gets his kids back.
Kids get kidnapped and held at gunpoint again.
And then
used as bait again. Yeah.
And then big spoiler alert. This was kind of heartbreaking. His oldest son got shot and his oldest son died. And then they had to go back and they had to fight because the daughters were still held captive on the ship.
Too much holding kids hostage with this movie to motivate action. Like, it's
really,
too much.
It really was.
It's too much.
And then they do another fight and then they, you know, they kill everybody except the colonel. And then the ship starts to go down like Titanic.
One of the whales, like... causes the ship to go down, right? I mean, it's cool stuff. There's cool stuff all throughout here.
Yeah.
I don't want to, I mean, we're bagging on it, but there's like stunning imagery. There's like a crab submarine that for me was like one of the most striking images. I mean, we get stuff with Neytiri firing arrows into helicopter pilots and they're crashing out.
Nice, yeah.
I can't get enough of that shit. There are great action beats throughout this hour long climax, but for me, none of it topped the climax from the first film.
No.
Where like banshees are like tossing helicopters into other helicopters and we're jumping out of airships and mech suits and it's like exploding behind us. I thought that was thrilling. That scene still plays really great. This was
a little too overindulgent because they had...
It goes on for an hour.
It goes on for an hour and obviously stuff does get blown up and yes.
shit gets blown up for sure.
One of my favorite moments was when the whale takes... matters in his own hands with a harpoon and wraps the harpoon wire around the boat.
Is that when the guy gets his...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a guy gets his arm pinned like against a wall by like a heavy rope.
Yep.
And then the rope breaks, ripping his arm off with it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, and it's satisfying because he's like the bad guy. He's like the main hunter.
Sure. Yeah.
So like... It's satisfying.
Stuff like that, yeah. I mean, yeah, stuff like that, I'll eat it up for sure.
I would have loved to see the whole whale family come in and bonded together and destroyed.
It's a cool climax, but yeah, it feels like Cameron is kind of holding back a little bit. I would have honestly, I would have liked a little more underwater action.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of above sea level knife fights. Like it culminates with a fucking knife fight, just like the first. And by that point, I was really kind of worn out. It's like, okay, now we're going to get a big long knife fight. Yeah. And I was pretty worn out by that point.
And then you're worn out, right? And then they fight underwater. And well, you
Jake
know,
chokes him out underwater.
Chokes him out underwater.
Kills him again. But
he doesn't because Spider saves him. And...
But wants nothing to do with him.
He just,
I hated that bit.
Saves them and he brings. So the colonel's coming back and Avatar 3. My curiosity with that is if he has a character arc now because. Where he gets redeemed because he's an Avatar body and all of these things. But if he comes back as a villain one more time.
Well, we're two movies in.
That is going to be, I'm not going to see any more of these movies.
We're 2 3-hour movies in and he hasn't really been given any any inkling of depth of feeling beyond wanting to murder.
Well, I mean, I think he's starting to, like, I think he's learning the way of the Na'vi.
So, like, he undergoes the same arc that Jake Sully underwent in the first film.
I hope that that's where it's going in the third one.
That would at least be something. I think the third movie is called The Seed Bearer, and it's about finding Kiri's dad.
Interesting.
Is it?
I don't know.
Mm. What kind of title is The Seed Bearer?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not into that. You know, we're skimming through a lot of things. There's a lot of cool, like, underwater stuff. Like, there's, like, butterfly wings that allow you to breathe underwater.
But we're skipping on Kiri. Kiri's...
She has a seizure at some point. Like, she hooks up to the fucking...
That's not what we're skipping. We're skipping that she's got some kind of connection to Mother. She's got some kind of connection to the...
That's when she has the seizure. She tries mother connecting, tree. Yeah. Connecting to, like, the home root.
And I think she gets overwhelmed because she's feeling everything at that point, right? Because she's got extra sensitivity and she can really get the animals and the plants to do what she wants.
She's like extra force sensitive.
Yeah, she is.
I guess we'll explore that more in the third film. That would be my guess. But I'll tell you, if the rest of the movies here are going to be shown at, like, wacky frame rates, I'm not down for that. I don't want to see any more of that. Yeah. I want to give this movie another watch at 24 frames, probably at home.
Like, do you think they'll slow it down on the home?
The standard rate for Blu-ray film is 24 frames. So he's the only one fucking around like this.
With 80 frames.
I think it's 60. I think it's like, I think it varies shot to shot. Yeah. Like, he's going crazy with this. But I guess what freaks me out is that, like, I thought that was like a 3D thing, like 3D high frame rate. If you want all the bells and whistles, go for that. But, like, we wanted to watch this in 2D and we got the high frame rate experience. Like, is every print of this
going to have that
with that high frame rate? Like, if I wanted to go back to the theater and just watch the straight 24 frames presentation, does that exist?
Maybe you would have to possibly do that in, like, a regular theater and not Dolby and not whatever.
Maybe it was because it was Dolby.
Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't advertised as high frame rate. So I feel like that was forced on me. I didn't want to watch it that way for my first viewing.
Yeah, because it definitely took away from things.
I hated it.
We may be more into this film if it wasn't that frame rate.
Yeah, I want to be able to just track the action with my eyes. And I just want, like, a steady frame rate version. Yeah. So I hope Cameron abandons that bullshit. Yeah. James Cameron movie, yeah, that really just did not work for me.
And I think where they're heading is they're going to unite the tribes on Pandora and fight
Quaritch again,
or fight the Earth government.
I'll be honest, I'm already kind of worn out with this fucking movie, this franchise. I wish Cameron had committed himself to Alita. Battle Angel.
Like, I agree. I love Alita. Oh, that was so much fun.
Instead of directing Alita Battle Angel, he handed that off to Robert Rodriguez so he could get back into the Avatar world. Alita Battle Angel clearly has more left to explore with its characters and its world. Avatar does not. Like, Avatar, it might be like, this is milked dry. It's done.
It was, you know, listen, like, the visuals are amazing. Like,
the first movie ended great. The first movie would have been a baller one-off. I made Titanic, crushed it. Made Avatar, crushed it. Now I'm going to make Alita Battle Angel. I'm going to crush it. He's lost me with this, like, endless Avatar sequel bullshit.
Well, yeah, because how many other movies are going to, like, six, right?
They've already filmed the next one.
Yeah.
And it's going to come out in 2 years. And then another one 2 years after that. And then maybe a third.
But it's already made, what, $450 million internationally?
I mean, we know with James Cameron movies, it's the long game.
It's
all about the word of mouth. I don't see this movie topping Avatar. I think it's real simple why Avatar did so well. It delivered on its promise.
It did.
And the promise was, this is a big screen spectacle adventure.
It's experience.
Like you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And people went and saw it and it delivered on that.
And people went and saw it again.
And I don't know what this movie delivers on.
Other than the whales.
You're going to see some whales. You're going to spend a solid hour with some whales.
So Patrick, do you think this movie was a good date movie?
You and I did not walk out feeling great.
No.
I think needed a drink.
I did. Well, I got this like blue concoction that the bartender made at the theater, and it stained my teeth. It's because they used some kind of like glitter that
it was
made
an Avatar themed drink.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they made like the drink look like there's waves in it, which was pretty cool. I mean, it was a good drink or whatever. Well, drink.
You're drinking it in the dark, so.
But like, it stained my hands for a couple of days, even after multiple washing, and like. Oh, it was fun.
The stain of Avatar.
The stain you can't of get Avatar. It off
okay, so you said you would give this a C-.
Yeah.
I would give it a C. We agree it's not a great date movie. And I mean, is there anything else to add?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously art is subjective. If you love it, I mean, it's got a 93% audience rating right now. So it's still being rated really well. We're just a little picky when it comes to the quality of movies.
I have to imagine that the high frame rate effect is going to be very polarizing. Like a large number of people who experience it that way are going to be like, what the hell is wrong with the picture?
Yeah.
So I can't recommend seeing the movie unless you can find a 24 frames version. But, you know, to each their own. Some people love it.
Yeah.
We did not. We don't go to the movies to hate on it.
No.
I mean, I wanted a transporting experience.
Gosh, we want a good movie, people. Like, come on. Like, you
could use a good movie right about now.
The last like four movies you've brought me to.
And I'm taking you to like stuff like The Fabelmans.
Yeah.
Right? Which is supposed to be one of the year's best.
Horrible.
Not Spielberg's best.
Man. Like, I mean, the best else? One is The Menu that you've taken me to. And that was, I had very low hopes for that. And I was like, oh, this is
also
interesting.
Also, we saw Glass Onion, and that was better than expected, right? The Knives Out sequel?
Glass Onion was better than expected, but still.
It helps to go in with low expectations.
Yeah.
And going into this Avatar sequel, I really didn't allow myself to get that excited other than it's a new James Cameron movie.
Yeah.
And like that, in my book, that used to be something to be excited about. But I guess.
But maybe the old guard of directing, they need to hang their hats up and say, hey, we did a great job. Let's bring in some new talent. Let's start like helping others get to where we are. And they're not doing that.
No. The movies have a lot of problems. And I mean, that's one of them. So that is Avatar, The Way of Water, directed by James Cameron. You can find more episodes at anchor.fm/movie date night, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review. Don't forget to check out our feature film, Tiny Dancers, which is streaming right now on Prime Video. And you can also email us at datenightmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, I'm Patrick.
I'm Ashley.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.